Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. I hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday season, a safe time on the roads, and a great time with family, and a time of being thankful. And as you might expect, we've got a full plate of political issues to serve up here as we begin the new week. And Jim, I don't know if there was a particular political story I was hoping to wake up to today, but this one's pretty good. Barney Frank, the longtime agitator from Massachusetts, until the Republicans took over the House, he was chairman of the Financial Services Committee, responsible for a big chunk of Dodd-Frank, longtime protector of Fannie and Freddie. When some folks were trying to sound the warning signals, he was busy protecting them. We know about the personal foibles of a former partner of his running a male prostitution ring out of a property that Frank owned. Generally, someone who's not very pleasant. This particular clip comes to mind after a constituent asked a question at a town hall meeting.
This is why your stupidity gets in the way of rational discussion.
And there you go. So Barney Frank has decided he will not run for re-election in 2012. Jim, I'm not sure why. It probably has to do with he would probably have a very tough re-election race, as he did for the first time in a long time in 2010. In the end, I really don't care. I'm just really happy Barney Frank's not going to be in Congress next year, or in 2013.
Don't go away mad, Barney. Just go away. Greg, what do you really think of him, though? From that long introduction, you kept hedging. As of this hour, by the time people listen to these words, we may know more. This came really out of the blue. So there's a couple of possibilities here. The first is some people are wondering whether there's a health issue. He's getting up there in years. Also, another possibility being mentioned is a scandal. Now, Greg, look, I mean, this is Barney Frank here. I know a lot of people have a hard time believing Barney Frank could get involved in a sex scandal. Actually, my bigger question is it's really hard to imagine Barney Frank getting in a sex scandal that would actually hurt his reputation. He has been kind of immune in this category. So we will see what happens there. A lot of buzz about the Republicans taking this seat. Under the new district lines, it's slightly more Democratic than it used to be. So Republicans should not, you know, it'll be a presidential election year, probably a lot of Democrats coming out pro-Obama, big Senate race between Scott Brown and probably Elizabeth Warren. So, you know, all in all, this is not going to be an easy pickup, but I think most Republicans are just happy to see Barney Frank go away. And let's hope it's not some health tragedy or something. But otherwise, this is some necessary house cleaning, no pun intended. The great news for the financial community, those who are tired of having a crazy liberal like Barney Frank running the committee, is that Maxine Waters is next in line to be the ranking Democrat. So some of us might say this is out of the frying pan into the fire.
Yeah, nothing to worry about there. The lady who actually admitted during an open hearing that we needed to embrace socialism. So a lot to look forward to there. But Barney Frank, I don't think a lot of conservatives are going to miss him. Important caveat, as you mentioned, at the time that we taped this, we don't really know what precipitated this, but if it is a health issue, obviously we wish him the best in recovering from that. But
we can't stand the guy, but we don't want him to be sick.
That's basically the most succinct way of putting it. I think you're right. No illusions of picking that up in a presidential election year. Hopefully we can. That would be a nice surprise, certainly. But in the end, whoever places him will be low on the seniority totem pole and will be a long time before they can do the kind of damage that Barney Frank did to the Congress and to the United States. So on that happy note, we turn to martini number two now. There are a lot of complicated issues at the Thanksgiving dinner table. Some families have some issues. The United States has some issues now with our friends in Pakistan. We have documented time and time again, especially in the wake of the bin Laden killing and so forth, and really over the last 10 years, about how some elements in Pakistan are supporting the enemy, some are supporting us, some support both, depending on what the circumstance and the day is. But of course, over the weekend, 24 Pakistani soldiers killed in NATO airstrikes. Now we're hearing stories that perhaps the Pakistanis fired first on Afghan forces. For a time there, all supply routes into Afghanistan were cut off by the Pakistanis. Whatever the real story is, this is a huge, huge mess and needs to be addressed in a way that I'm not really sure what the solution is. I'm pretty sure that the current administration isn't fit to handle it, but I do hope that as we have our men and women in harm's way in Afghanistan, they do solve this quickly. But this is a relationship that is deteriorating and deteriorating fast.
You know, it's interesting you use the word mess, Greg, because I'm looking at page A8 of the Washington Post. The lead story is about the blow to shaky U.S.-Pakistan ties. And right in the, you know, in the leading paragraph, it says, quote, "This is a mess," unquote, said a U.S. military official in Kabul, who, like other officials, spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the sensitive situation. When you have to go on background to say that it's a mess, those are some pretty tough guidelines for talking to the press. If it's, you know, I think everybody who looks at this can tell this is a mess. What's kind of intriguing is that, you know, a little further on, you can say, the incident once again ground regular diplomatic encounters to a halt, as has happened during after other recent crises, including the U.S. raid to kill Osama bin Laden in Pakistan in May. In other words, regularly, our relationship with Pakistan seems to hit the rocks. And when, for better or for worse, you know, it doesn't seem like any of these turn out to be, you know, all-out hostilities between the U.S. and Pakistan. Having said that, you know, people say, how do we repair our relationship with Pakistan? I'm not sure we have a relationship with Pakistan. Now, there are people saying this one is very serious. We should not expect this to blow over soon. It just kind of feels like this is just we're watching a steady deterioration. It seems like when you've got a lot of U.S. forces operating in one area and Pakistan, you know, and the whole fight is going on the Afghan-Pakistani border, we are having that same catch-22 in which if we tell the Pakistanis, hey, be careful, we've got U.S. military forces in the area, somehow, some way, the Taliban figures out that we have U.S. military forces in an area. So in the end, this comes down to the usual problem with of Pakistan. One person described it as there are two Pakistans and you never know which one you're talking to. Good Pakistan or bad Pakistan. I understand why Rick Perry says we should cut off all aid, that they just basically met a lot of Americans have reached the point where we don't want to deal with this country anymore. As Bachman said, this is a nuclear power and you can't just quite, you know, cut them off and ignore them and hope that things get better on their own. I hope that our current administration and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and all these folks can come together with some great innovative approach to improve what we're seeing over there. But not optimistic, Greg.
No.
Not cheerful.
No, this has basically gone in one direction in recent months, and unfortunately it's not one that's beneficial to our mission or to our men and women in uniform. You mentioned the Republican debate, and the last couple foreign policy debates have been pretty impressed with the fact that the Republican candidates have said our relationship with Pakistan is a critical issue. I tend to agree with Bachman and others who say that because it is a nuclear power that you do have to handle it differently than if it weren't. I'm not sure that any of them or really anybody knows exactly what the right solution is here. I'm sure Newt will have seven or eight ideas before the end of the week, but hopefully one of them will be good. And certainly, as we mentioned, hopefully the Obama diplomatic team handles this as well as possible. Speaking of Newt, it wasn't that long ago, Jim, that you and I were chronicling his bizarre response on Meet the Press to Paul Ryan's budget balancing Medicare reform plan, saying it was right-wing social engineering. Then you had the Tiffany's, the cruise to the Greek Isles, all sorts of other things, which left just about everyone saying, Newt Gingrich's campaign is dead in the water. Why is he even still in this thing? He's probably just in it to try and pay off some campaign debts. Well, funny thing happened on the way to Iowa and New Hampshire, as it turns out, because Newt Gingrich is now ahead in national polls, as we've documented in the last couple of weeks. And now he's got the very much sought-after endorsement of the what was one time the Manchester Union leader, I think it's the New Hampshire Union leader now, a paper that strongly endorsed Ronald Reagan, endorsed John McCain, I believe, last time. So this is another feather in the cap for Newt Gingrich, a guy who's just gaining more and more strength all the time. And it seems like a few of us, mainly you and me, at least on this podcast and in a couple other places, are a little bit stunned, I'm sure, and eating just a tad bit of crow as we get ready for early January.
Oh, no, Greg. We talked about this before we hit the record button, that you went back and could not find any moment where you and I said Newt Gingrich is done. We never said he was kaput. We never said that his bid was doomed. And we never said he would never get the endorsement of New Hampshire Union leader. So I would like to take credit, not for being right, but for simply not getting around to being wrong. sometimes... Kids, the lesson here is that sometimes procrastination works. Ignore making those bold pronouncements, and then when, you know, the circumstances are dramatically reversed, no one has any evidence of you being wrong. No, this is extraordinary for Newt, and I give him some credit not just for going in and wowing the union leader editors, but also for it sounds like he's getting more staffers on the ground in South Carolina and key states like this. You're starting to see the outlines of a strategy. It's hard to imagine that if he is the primary non-Romney alternative that he'll do that badly in Iowa. Right now, Mitt Romney continues to lead the polls in New Hampshire quite well, but it seems pretty likely he'll have at least I'd be really surprised if he wasn't in the top three in New Hampshire. And then you go down to South Carolina, which is generally a more conservative demographic down there, and it's very easy to see Gingrich doing well there. So, here's the thing. At some point, you get to Super Tuesday. At some point, you get to it's not these little one state here, one state there, where, you know, you can operate on a skeleton crew. At some point, you need to compete in a whole bunch of states all at once, and that's when a campaign really has to ramp up the advertising and operations to a whole new level. Clearly, this is a level that Mitt Romney is already ready for. And one thing I would note is that Mitt Romney has not run a single negative ad against Newt Gingrich yet. You know, Greg, we can just think about what we do. You know, the couch ad with Nancy Pelosi, Didi Scosafaza, the cruise, the three marriages, the attack on Paul Ryan. There's plenty of material. If you want to run a negative ad against Newt Gingrich in a primary, it's out there. Now, whether it'll work is another story. Maybe a whole bunch of Republicans have decided they don't want Mitt Romney and they see Newt Gingrich as the best option. That certainly was the mentality of the union leader. So, there's new life in the Newt Gingrich campaign. I would just kind of observe, listen to the big boss, Rich Lowry, Meet the Press. He came up with, I think, one of the most inspired comparisons for the Gingrich campaign so far, which was to compare him to the Will Forte sketch on Saturday Night Live, MacGruber.
Right.
You're familiar with this, Greg,
which
basically plays a MacGyver type and who's
exactly.
always caught in some control room and the bomb is ticking down and MacGruber always gets ready to defuse the bomb using household objects the same way MacGyver used to. And then at some point MacGruber gets distracted or hubris takes root or he, you know, for whatever reason, he does not focus on the task at hand. And every sketch he ends up getting blown up and somehow magically back together for the next one. So this is a nice way of saying that Gingrich always seems like a bit of a ticking time bomb. There's always that chance he's going to put his foot in his mouth. There's always that chance there'll be something terrible. We saw the lobbying for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac recently. I mean, in ordinary times, that could really derail a conservative candidate. These are not ordinary times. We'll have to see how this shakes out. I might not put all of my chips on the successful completion of the Newt Gingrich comeback. And if people want to quote this back to me in a couple of months, they're certainly free to do that.
Yeah, I think there's some reservations there myself. He's the conservative that's probably peaking at the time. Some of the others wish they had, like Bachman and Kane and Perry and so forth. But it's a long time. We still have more than a month. So who knows what other trends might develop. But Newt seems to be rising at a time that's good for him. We'll find out if we have more corrections and retractions to make in the future. Jim, great to be back, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch.